Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, Michael Hanlon. So now you've retired after such a long career, what do you write about these days, Michael?
Well, not a lot. I do have this connection with the writers group Ulipo, which is fairly new. It came after the one that I'd been running in the public library. We meet a couple of times a month. We talk about books and writing and reading and that sort of thing. And what we do, after every meeting, we have a topic which most often I select, but I haven't run out of ideas, so of course everybody else chips in. And you have to write 150 words suggested by that topic. Not necessarily use that name of that subject. I mean, the one that's coming up for tomorrow's meeting is something offensive. That sort of thing. Right. Mm. So that's about all I do these days, except what we're doing as well. We put out a book last year, an anthology of some of her work, just called Ulipo Book One. And then they wanted to do another one this year. I managed to put it off until next year. And one of the things we always have been doing for a long time is what we call a progressive story, where we sort of draw names out of a hat and we each take it in terms to write a segment. And before, we were doing it always with 150-word segments, and we weren't getting much of a story. So I said, let's just write as much as we want this time, and we'll get sort of a chapter from everybody. So that's something I've been doing. And I got to do the first chapter of that. It's now up to its fourth episode, I think.
But is it more interesting now you took away that restriction?
I think so, because the other thing that we did, it's just an exercise, really, was that nobody knew what was coming next. Mm. So you wouldn't know what had happened before until you got your episode. Now we decided to send it to everybody and let everybody read it, and they can digest it. And I started it with a light, frothy piece, my opening chapter. I think it is, anyway. That's where I intended it to be. And then it went to one of the writers, Christine Sharp, who turned it into a sort of a spy thing. I mean, it involved a crime, but it turned it into a spy thing, and it's set around here now. I deliberately moved it part the way here. So it's a bit of fun. It's just fun for fun.
So tell us a bit more about Ulipo. Where did that name come from?
Well, some time ago, I don't know where I saw it. Maybe there's a thing online, you can get a daily thing called a word a day, which gets you sent a word a day. And it may have been in that. And I saw it long ago, and I thought, that's an interesting name. What it means is it's the name of a French television program about writing. And I think it comes from Ouvrage de la littérature potentielle, a workshop of potential literature, which is a flowery way of saying what we do, you know. But we wanted a name that didn't suggest, you know, didn't to the average person, say the Writers' Society or anything like that. We just wanted it to be something with a little cultish thing about it. I had this thing that this would be a great cult and I would be the guru, you know. It didn't work out that way. So that's where that came from.
So you said that Ulipo has published an anthology, and you edited it, did you?
Yes.
Yes.
They're very good writers. I was surprised at the quality of everything, because I spent a lot of time writing and reading, and they're very serious. I mean, a lot of them are taking courses and workshop courses and that sort of thing. The quality is very good, and there's not a lot of editing required. So
the group's planning another book?
The book is planned for this fall. There's a woman named Jocelyn Gard who works at the library, who's a journalism graduate who's doing the handling. She did all the work on putting the other one out, really. I mean, I just read through the stuff and, you know, copy edited a bit and proofread it. But she did the actual work of getting it published and put into print and selling the damn thing. And she's in charge of that now. Heidi Kroot, who's been on your show, I think another one of our writers, is looking after making sure, keeping track of all the copy coming in. And then my job is to cross the T's, dot the I's, and make sure the word awesome is taken out. Awesome
and
is
organize
bad.
It. Yes. What do you really enjoy about leading a group like this?
Well, one of the things is that they're a lot of fun.
Yeah.
There's nothing formal about it. We just all sit around. We now actually, quite fitting in my case, though I don't live there, meet at the Palisades Retirement Residence, which is where the old hospital used to be, because one of our members just moved in there. They look after us very nicely. They have a nice library.
Mm-hmm.
they give us coffee and we sit around and talk about books, and it's a lot of fun, and everybody has something on the go. May not necessarily have anything to do with what we're actually doing, but it's all part of life's rich teeming pageant, as they say.
Sure.
And so we'll get something out of it. Yeah. I'm surprised because one of the things I did when I retired from the Star, they asked me, or the then managing editor asked me if I would come back and do a thing as writing coach, and on a freelance basis sort of thing. And I did. And the thing was that I would go in and people would, they'd say, Mike Hanlon's coming in for such and such a day, if you want to sit down on a one-on-one with him. I didn't give lessons or anything. And I talked about writing and what problems were. And I thought I'd get a lot of new people, and mostly what I got were old-timers like myself who were written out. Like, I'm fed up with writing this same story over and over again. And I, for the first time, really had to think about what I'd been doing all those years. Think about I'd never taken a course in writing. I'd never been taught how to do any of this. You just picked it up as you went along. I mean, you watched other people and read things. Read, everything. And then I had to think about what it was. It's the same with Ulipo. We sit about it, and they talk about things. What? We're talking about appropriation of voice and character. What the hell is this? I had all this stuff. I mean, all I have here is just from what I've read. Everything I'd written about was this happened there, this happened there, this happened there. So these things come up, and I learn just, well, it's not that I don't teach anything. I just sort of, not mentor, I suppose, just guided through, facilitate or something like that. It's good.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So how about reading it for us?
This is the first episode that was my turn to go first. And frankly, I had no idea where I was going. And then I just thought of a couple of characters. There's a woman named Rosamund. And I thought, well, they're going to make this into a movie one day, and I want this part to be played by Rosamund Pike. So I chose the name Rosamund. So I don't have a title for it, but it's just a progressive first episode. Dinner had been splendid. Oysters for him, a bisque for her, then a small sole meunière for each, followed by something unbelievable done to wild boar. There'd been a margot somewhere along the way and sinful cheeses with Bath Olivers to close. Rosamund was in mulberry silk, Balenciaga, Martin guessed, or perhaps one of Elsa's. The candles winked back from her choker. Her faint perfume, dabbed behind the knees as well as the ears, as he knew, barely reached him. He had never loved any woman as deeply as he loved Rosamund. "I want us to get a divorce," he said. "Right now I'd agree to anything," Rosamund said somewhat sleepily. "But don't you think we should get married first?" "I'll get around to that later. First we have to get a divorce." Rosamund sat straighter and peered at him closely, searching the tilt of his chin, his eyes, his lips. No twinkle, no smirk, no lifted eyebrows, no twitch. But then Martin never twitched. "You're up to something, aren't you? Or more likely, you're onto something. That's why you want the divorce." "Well, let's face it, Ducky, the marriage would never work," Martin said. "After all, I'm a thief and you're a whore." "I am not," she protested. Martin said nothing. "Oh, I see," Rosamund said. "Just because I went to bed with the Sultan's son doesn't mean I'm a whore." She took a sip of cognac. "Besides, it was business." "Exactly." "Very funny. If I hadn't slept with the Sultan's son, you wouldn't have got your sticky fingers on the Sultan's Leonardo figurines. A task for which you were well rewarded, I might point out." This was one of the reasons Martin adored her. Another woman would have thrown the cognac in his face, or screamed, or rushed from the restaurant, or all three, leaving him pale and embarrassed, and worst of all, a centre of attention, which was as good as death for someone in his line of work. But Rosamund sensed he was, as she put it, up to something. "Haven't you overlooked an important detail?" she said. "I don't think so. We get a divorce, we get married, and then we get to work." "But what judge is going to give us a divorce if we aren't even married?" Martin nodded to a hovering waiter. "I think we'd enjoy another cognac," he said. Rosamund was right. Absent her dalliance with the Sultan's son, Leonardo's would still be in a vault in Istanbul, where the Sultan believed them still to be, instead of in a vault in Hong Kong, awaiting their new owner, who was even now in a stateroom on the Pacific on his way to take possession. "The divorce will not be a problem," Martin said. "I need only remind you that you have, how many, 3 passports?" "4, I think." They remained silent. Martin took a sip and considered a cigar, decided not, and took another sip. Aha, I've got it, Rosamond said. You're going to call on Archie's peculiar talents. I already have. He'll have the decree ready by the weekend. You bastard. And then what? And then this, Martin said, reaching into a pocket and placing the small black cube before her. I think I'm supposed to say, open it. Rosamond opened it. No point in asking how much you paid for this, I suppose, she said. Don't be silly. I think you're supposed to give a little squeal of delight just to alert our fellow diners to this touching scene. Martin took the ring from the box and slipped it on Rosamond's finger. She gave a little squeal of delight and held her arm out straight to admire her diamond. Darling, it's beautiful, she gushed. Their fellow diners appeared charmed. Armand himself approached. Mademoiselle, Monsieur Chanon, he said, giving the surname the full French treatment. I am so happy for you. Both, my compliments. Merci, Armand, Martin said. That just about wraps up our evening, I think. Perhaps our waiter could bring the bill. Mais non, Armand said, such a happy occasion. I insist, Monsieur Chanon, you and your charming fiancée must be my guests this evening. You are too gracious, mon vieux. Je vous en prie, monsieur, Armand said as he stepped away. Madame, monsieur, à la prochaine. What a charming host, Rosamond said. It's a shame to be leaving. I think perhaps we should, though, Martin said as they rose from the table. We have to pack. We're catching the flesh d'or tomorrow. My God, Rosamond said, then I'd better get some beauty sleep. Not before we've celebrated our engagement, I hope, Martin said. Actually, the train doesn't leave until 12:15. Then we'll have time to celebrate it twice, Rosamond said.
That was fun, Michael. I shall like to hear the rest of the
So
of
would
the
I. I have no idea where it's going. So would I.
So many thanks to Michael for coming in today. Now, where can people purchase the Ulupo anthology?
Well, they can get in touch with us at our website, mm-hmm. or get in touch with Jocelyn Gard at the Cobo Public Library.
Okay. And to connect with us, please send comments, queries or suggestions for whom we might interview on future programs to wordonthehills897@gmail.com or leave a comment on our website, www.wordonthehills.com, where all our broadcasts are archived. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week.